mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Never mind the "what doesn't kill you makes you stronger" sentiments of motivational plaques and pop songs. Rejection bites. Anybody who's been cast aside by an early love or passed over by an employer may find some comfort in learning that the Diary of Anne Frank was rejected by 16 publishing houses, including an editor at Knopf who panned it as a dreary record of typical family bickering, petty annoyances, and adolescent emotions. Also dismissed were George Orwell's Animal Farm and manuscripts by Jack Kerouac, Sylvia Plath, and in an infamously mocking rejection letter, Gertrude Stein. Jeff Schatz is executive editor at Grey Wolf Press, where he writes his fair share of rejection letters, and he's with us to talk about an essay he wrote on the art of rejection, an art he does not recommend to others. Jeff, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, here's the cold math that you tallied. Grey Wolf accepts under one-third of 1% of submissions. You must have written a lot of rejection letters.
As I say in the piece, I have done some terrible math, and some of it is exactly what you've quoted. Another statistic is I believe I've probably written at least 2,000 rejection letters in 15 years of publishing.
Oh, that's hard to hear.
It's hard to write.
Well, when you became an editor, what kind of advice did you receive about writing rejection letters?
Not very much. And I think that's part of the reason I wanted to write the piece is there needs to be a culture, and this goes for publishing houses or grant makers or contests, where there is some way that we impart this knowledge to those who are learning the art, in this case, the art of rejection or the art of publishing. We publish about 30 to 35 books a year. So it's those odds are stacked against writers, and I know that it's very hard for writers to hear those numbers. I wanted to, in my piece to turn the tables and sort of show that those numbers are also stacked against the person who has to do the rejecting part of it.
That kind of volume requires a form letter.
It requires a form letter. It requires many editors keep a sort of template letter that they can fill out relatively quickly, in part because of the volume, but in part because psychologically and spiritually, it's hard to spend a lot of time turning someone down. It's excruciating.
It must be very difficult. But you also write in your essay about being nice, especially when compared to some of the more scathing rejection letters on record. We mentioned Gertrude Stein's. Apparently, Alfred Knopf wrote to historian John Hope Franklin, "We feel that you've completely missed your chance to write a colorful and dramatic book." Snap! I mean, that's got to hurt. How do you soften the blow?
I think by being empathetic, by putting yourself in the position of the writer, and realizing that you're in a position where what you say matters to that person, and sometimes a great deal. So I think even simple things, using the author's name, that sounds like a simple thing, but most of those form letters, and understandably with that volume, start, "Dear author."
I guess they know what the message is going to be after that.
Yeah, you don't even have to read after a salutation like that, right? I mean, it's an already understood in the framework of a rejection letter that "dear author" nothing good can follow that. Use the author's name and use your own name when you sign off. The more human this back and forth, this conversation, and I think it is a conversation, the more human that can be, I think the more empathetic the whole possibility of the writer-editor relationship can be from the start. I think so many writers have a sense of the editor being a sort of adversary, a sort of gatekeeper, an obstacle, in the way of their genius. And sometimes that's true. I mean, those scathing rejection letters you mentioned, I mean, they can be incredibly crushing. especially to someone who has spent, in many cases, years or decades producing, you know, a novel or a play or a book of poetry or a translation, you know, any of those works that take a lifetime of learning to really produce, and then to have it so cursorily dismissed, that's crushing.
Well, do you have that sense that you are determining somebody's fate when you're writing this back? Which can cut both ways, let's face it, Jeff. You know, a lot of pieces of literature that are submitted and get rejected for very good reasons. And maybe people should not be trying to make their career out of writing.
Well, that's true, but that's not for me to say. I mean, only the author can make that decision, whether to keep writing or to stop writing. I often tell writers that the truth is you'll probably be able to wallpaper your entire bathroom with rejection letters. And that's part of the deal. And really at any level, I've certainly heard magazine editors mention to me they've turned down Nobel Prize winners before.
Has that ever happened to you? We read about, you know, these rejection letters of famous authors. Did you ever let someone slide and think, oh, God, I really regret that?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, every editor, there are those books that come to you, you know, in a submission form, or maybe they come from the agent or come directly from the author, where that work is in a really early form. And you can't always make the call. And literary history will always prove you wrong. You know, we don't know yet. It's the kind of amazing thing about literary history and the way that time and special collections and archives work in this industry is all of those things will prove us all wrong. The editor wants to be known for, of course, selecting, you know, this writer and this writer and this Pulitzer Prize winner and this National Book Award winner. And sometimes that happens. History often shows, I mean, as you did with, you know, talking about The Historian and talking about Anne Frank and Nabokov and others who were turned down many, many times. I mean, we can now go back into those archives and sort of laugh. You know, we laugh a little bit when we see that horrible letter from Arthur Fifield to Gertrude Stein. That is one of the most sort of, you know, mocking her style back to her, which I think is one of the most biting rejection letters I've ever read. But in the end, I mean, the joke of history is on him. That said, I'm glad to say that at least so far, I have not turned down any Nobel Prize winners.
Okay, we're going to ask if you'd be willing to name names.
I, you know, a good editor should not name names, but part of it is, I mean, you know, you turn something down. You know, I mentioned, you know, something comes to you in maybe an early form. Let's say 2 years later, you see that book being picked up by another press. And it's, you know, and it's totally transformed and it's different and it's better. And maybe you would have made a different decision if the manuscript would have come to you like that. But it means that editor at that other publishing house saw something that you didn't see. And this is why, rather than competing with each other, I think we're all in the same collective enterprise of bringing forward the art of literature. And that's really important to have those colleague presses, not as adversaries or competitors, though, I mean, of course, that's there in the background.
Well, how about you? I mean, you are a person who's in the business of publishing, but also of rejecting people. How do you typically respond to rejection? I mean, are you analyzing the form of the letter and noting that your name would be named? Or were you just thinking about the message? Oh, they don't like me. They don't want me.
I think the message hits first. I mean, how can it not? I want to try to even give a sentence that says why we made this decision. You know, and it can be, it's very hard to do. It's very hard to put your finger on something to tell someone why you turned them down. But I hope that says to the writer, maybe not on that first reading, but on that second reading, that might be helpful to them or helps them at least understand from Grey Wolf Press, just one publisher of many, why we made the decision we did. I hope that's helpful. And I hope that's more helpful than just saying, no, your work is not wanted at this time.
Jeff Schatz, executive editor at Grey Wolf Press. Thank you so much for, staying with us.
Thank you. I hope your listeners don't mind hearing about rejection.
Well, you know, everybody has to live with it. It's good to hear it on the other side. You can read Jeff's essay on the art of rejection, including some of the revenge responses that we could not share on radio that are really worth looking at. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Jeff Schatz included several notable rejection letters in his essay to remind all of us that the old gatekeepers did not always get it right. We decided to turn a few notable examples into dramatic readings. During our conversation, Jeff mentioned one of the most famously cutting rejection letters ever penned. Gertrude Stein is now well known for her use of repetition as a rhetorical device. But when she submitted the manuscript for Three Lives to a London publisher, she was a relative unknown and got this mocking response.
A letter to Miss Gertrude Stein from Arthur C. Fifield, publisher. April 19th, 1912. Dear Madam, I am only one, only one, only one. Not two, not three, only one. Only one life to live. Only 60 minutes in 1 hour. Only one pair of eyes, only one brain, only one being. Being only one, having only one pair of eyes, having only one time, having only one life, I cannot read your manuscript three or four times. Not even one time. Only one look is enough. Hardly one copy would sell here. Hardly one, hardly one. Many thanks. I am returning the manuscript by registered post. Only one manuscript by one post. Sincerely, Arthur C. Fifield, publisher.
Getting a personalized rejection letter is pretty rare. More often, publishers, record companies, and movie houses rely on carefully worded form letters, like this one from Sub Pop, the record label that signed Nirvana. The letterhead reads, "From Sub Pop, celebrating several years of record making.
Dear Loser, thank you for sending your demo materials to Sub Pop for consideration. Presently, your demo package is one of a massive quantity of commendable material we receive every day at Sub Pop World Headquarters, and, due to time and volume restrictions, is on its way through the great lower intestine that is the talent acquisition process. We appreciate your interest in Sub Pop and wish you the best in your pursuit. Kind regards." Footnote: this is a form letter. This letter is what is known as a rejection letter.
Gold teeth and a curse for this town. They're all in my mouth. Only I don't know how.
What we're listening to are rejection letters that have been written to people who we now consider pioneers in their respective fields. Now just imagine the mortification Alfred H. Barr, director of museum collections at the Museum of Modern Art, must have felt when he recalled declining the gift of a drawing from one Andy Warhol.
Dear Mr. Warhol, last week, our committee on the museum collections held its first meeting of the fall season and had a chance to study your drawing entitled Shoe, which you so generously offered as a gift to the museum. I regret that I must report to you that the committee decided, after careful consideration, that they ought not to accept it for our collection. Sincerely, Alfred H. Barr, Jr., Director of Museum Collections. P.S. The drawing may be picked up from the museum at your convenience.
Ain't got nothing at all.
Sometimes being dismissed has nothing to do with the actual talent of the person applying. This apparent form letter from Disney Studios was written back in 1938 to an aspiring artist who was rejected on the basis of her sex.
Dear Miss Ford, your letter of recent date has been received in the inking and painting department for reply. Women do not do any of the creative work in connection with preparing the cartoons for the screen, as that work is performed entirely by young men. The only work open to women consists of tracing the characters on clear celluloid sheets with India ink and filling in the tracings on the reverse side with paint, according to the directions. It would not be advisable to come to Hollywood with the above specifically in view, as there are really very few openings in comparison with the number of girls who apply. Yours, very truly, Mary Cleave, Walt Disney Productions Limited.
want to show you what I thought of you.
Here. Oh, that's what you think of me. Oh, I think you're smart, don't you? Here.
Oh, baby.
And that was word of mouth's small selection of dramatic readings of real rejection letters. You can find even more letters, including one from an editor who passed on the Diary of Anne Frank, calling it, quote, dull. It's on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.